the Dementia Researcher podcast, talking careers, research, conference highlights, and so much more.
This special podcast was recorded in front of a live audience at Trinity College Dublin for the AAIC Neuroscience Next Ireland Hub on the 23rd of April. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Hello to everyone here at Trinity College Dublin, and another big hello to everyone who's listening or watching this online. So this is a special recording for the Dementia Researcher podcast. My name is Francesca Farina. I'm a senior fellow with the Global Brain Health Institute at Trinity College in Dublin, and I'm also a research assistant professor in the University of Chicago. I'm delighted to be joined by three other people on stage here who, like me, at some point in their careers have left their home for the work that they do. And that's the topic that we're going to be talking about. Our title for this podcast is Leaving Home for Science, Migration of Minds. So we think there's going to be a lot to discuss here. So I'm going to jump in by starting to introduce my guests. So we're joined by Elul Lekau, Claudia Suimoto, and Muireann Irish. Thank you for joining us. So Elul is a clinical psychologist and mental health advocate. She set up her own practice after obtaining her master's in clinical psychology from Addis Ababa University College of Health Science. She also hosts radio and television programs on the issue of mental health, and she uses social media platforms to discuss brain health and raise awareness of dementia. Elul left Ethiopia last year to join us here at Trinity College as an Atlantic Fellow for Equity and Brain Health with GBHI. So welcome, Elul.
Thank you.
Claudia is an Associate Professor of Geriatrics at the University of São Paulo Medical School in Brazil. She obtained her PhD at the same institution, exploring the association between dementia and atherosclerosis using morphometric measures in autopsy samples. She also has a master's in epidemiology and a postdoctoral fellowship from Harvard T. H. Chan School of Public Health in the US. And amongst the other things that she does, she's currently one of the coordinators for the Brain Bank of the Brazilian Aging Brain Study Group. Welcome, Claudia.
Thank you so much.
And finally, Muireann completed her PhD here at Trinity College and is now Professor of Cognitive Neuroscience at the University of Sydney. She works on the loss of empathy during dementia. Her career has explored how memory and imagination are changed during neurological conditions, including Alzheimer's disease. And it's this work that took her from Dublin to Australia. She's also an advocate for diversity in science and, in particular, retention of women in science. So let's welcome our guests. Thank you. So the question, as I mentioned, is we want to address today is really around what's called the academic brain drain by a lot of people. Questions around, is moving necessary to become successful in the work that you do? Why do we move? Would we be better staying in one place? What policies are stopping us or encouraging us to go? And who gets to move or who gets to stay? So I'm going to start by giving each of our guests just a couple of minutes to share their overarching thoughts on this theme and maybe what inspired them to move from where they grew up and their general thoughts on the topic. So I'm going to go to you first, Claudia.
So thank you. So I would start saying that I finished medical school in one institution, did my residence, and then did my PhD in the same institution. And after I finished, I became a professor. Everything was super fast. And once you become a professor in my institution, you're a professor until you're 70 years old. So for me, I didn't have to change if I didn't want to. But what happened is that during my PhD, I really fell in love with statistics. I tried to learn everything that I could from my institution. And I reached a wall. I could not learn anything different from there. So I started doing an online course from Harvard. And from there, I finished the course and I say, I want more. And then I asked the instructor, what could I do? He said, oh, you can come to Harvard and try a master here. He wrote me a lovely letter of recommendation. It worked out. I went there. And I think it was the most transformative experience that I have in my life. Totally changed the level of research that I do nowadays. And that's something that we didn't have time to discuss with the early career investigators. But learning statistics and epidemiology is really life-changing for us in research because we can put our own impressions and work in the data in our way. So for me, it was life-changing. And I have the opportunity to come back to Brazil 3 years later. a totally different woman. It was really nice for my family too. At the time I had a, I still have a daughter, and she was there and then come back. And I think the good thing about coming back, maybe jumping to the next question, is that I could transform the environment that I'm in right now that I was before. And it has been very impactful for the research that we do in the brain bank and also in the epidemiological studies.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Elul, I'm going to come to you next. Just what Claudia said there about bringing knowledge back, I guess that's one of the aims of GBHI and the GBHI Fellowship. So presumably one of the reasons you've come here is to bring knowledge back to your home country. You're not a researcher, you're a clinician and advocate. So can you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Yes, for me, it's my first time moving out from Ethiopia for an academic purpose. And as you said, one of the things that motivated me to move abroad was I was one of the lucky 12 fellows to join the GBHI community as a fellow. And it was, for me, joining GBHI is an opportunity, a chance to contribute to the international dialogue and to join the efforts that everyone is doing to address the public concern we're having, which is dementia. Talking about brain drain and how it affects my country, Ethiopia. First of all, in the healthcare system, we already have a big demand. We have challenges in resource and qualified personnel, and you can imagine how brain drain or brain migration affects or exacerbates the already existing situation in the healthcare system. And another thing will be in the higher education system in institutions. The same problem exists in Ethiopia. Higher education institutions, they do lack qualified faculty members, and this is also another challenge because, you know, the coming generation is not getting quality education, and of course this is a very big problem in one's country's development. Another issue would be maybe economic development. When people migrate, especially the most skilled ones, the most productive ones, when they migrate, they take the potential and their contribution with them away. So this might be a great challenge, especially in the case of developing countries like Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Lots to follow up on there. We're going to go to Moira next. So it's been a few years since you moved to Sydney, would you say?
It's been a while, yeah. But I was very young when I moved. So I did my PhD and undergrad here at Trinity. And I took a year off after I had finished my PhD because I really had no plan and I had been in formal education for so long. So I worked as a statistician, actually, at a marketing consultancy, and just started saving up money to go traveling because I hadn't done any of that before. So this was, I mean, you'll find out pretty quickly, I'm a bit of a maverick. I had no plan. And so I went off gallivanting around Southeast Asia and Borneo, went to see orangutans, went to New Zealand, did all of this. Arrived in Melbourne with the intention of staying there for a year. And at the same time, the global financial crisis had just happened. And my parents basically said, do not come back here. There is nothing here for you. You have to stay. And so it was quite the opposite of anything that's been discussed here. It was more, I have to now start from scratch. I had nothing. I was trying to find jobs. I didn't have the right visa. I didn't have the right skill set. I couldn't come in as a skilled migrant. So I ended up working in part-time jobs, just trying to make ends meet, and then started sending out emails to researchers that were in the either Sydney, Melbourne, Queensland. I was scrambling. And just serendipitously, I sent an email to a person called John Hodges, who I had no idea how eminent this person was. It was just kind of like, hey, I heard you do dementia research. Here's my CV. It's really bad. And he just emailed straight back and said, I'll fly you to Sydney. Do you want to come and do an interview for a postdoc? And I was just like, oh, thank goodness. So I had to claw my way back in, basically. I'd been out of the system at that point for 3 years and then was trying to sort of find my feet in a new system. I didn't understand how the funding worked. I wasn't eligible for any of the grants. And it's been a real sort of like, I'm very scrappy. It's been a real like, I am not getting kicked out again. So I'm staying in and trying to make it work. And yeah, it's worked out thankfully, but it was very difficult at the start.
Yeah. I guess that's one of the questions I was thinking about as well. You know, what would you wish you had known? So I moved to Chicago nearly 2 years ago, and now I think I would know what I'm letting myself in for, but I don't think I did at the time, culturally or financially or, you know, anything like that. So is there anything that jumps to mind when you think about, you know, what you would advise somebody else or what you wish you had known at the time? Maybe Muireann, I'll start with you just because you've kind of already touched on that.
Yeah, I just feel like just don't do what I did. Like just
take
my story. And
says.
Yeah, I think, you know, in hindsight, it worked out just because of the way I am. I'm a very determined person. I work very, very hard. But it was the first maybe 3 years were extremely difficult. I had no social network. I didn't know anybody. We had no furniture in our apartment. We were just literally looking for jobs and, you know, didn't have the right visa, anything like that. So I think in hindsight, I would always advise that people would, you know, have a look at the actual landscape that you're moving to. Maybe have an idea or set up your connections before you go. It just, none of it had been planned. I never planned to move to Australia. It's just that it was kind of foisted on me. But I think now that I'm there, I've been very, very lucky in that just this person that I mentioned, John Hodges, just elevated my career. He saw something and he just decided he was going to mentor me. And he's the person that made it possible for me to rise. And that's been the thing I've probably taken the most from the move, is that I want to be the mentor that he was to me. And so I think it's more about seeing the talent in somebody, giving them a chance and, you know, getting them in from when they're not able to, you know, advocate for themselves or get funding. So I've paid for the funding for 3 or 4 students now from India, China and other like countries that aren't able to have the same opportunities. And, you know, I try and sponsor them in a way that John did for me. And so they can rise up and have the same opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Kind of touches back on something that you said about your mentor, Claudia, writing that letter for you that got you to Harvard. So is this kind of mentorship resonating with you?
Yeah, it's having super important because when you see from the outside, years later, you see how important this kind of help it is for younger investigators, for early career researchers. And at that time, it's funny because he's at Harvard. He's a full professor. Got a presidential medal, very successful. But at the time, he's just 1 year older than me at medical school, and I was my friend. So in the end, it was something that was not super vertical at that time. It's a little bit different. I knew him before. But it was so impactful for me at that time because the letter was super strong. I think everything that was written there is true. But at the same time, it's such an important process. And just jumping in a little bit in these other questions, I think what resonates with all of us is that we don't think too much when we move to another place. Otherwise, if you put everything like pros and cons, you don't do it. I have this impression because it's always overwhelming. Even if you want to go there a lot to learn new things, it's always overwhelming because the culture is different. But at the same time, I think it's for sure, part of the beauty of changing cultures is this shock. I can say now that even I came back almost 10 years, I still have friends from that time. They come to Brazil, I come to Canada or other countries, and it has been really great, this exchange. Some of them are researcher collaborators until now, some of my school friends. So yeah, it has been was really transformative, as I said before.
So speaking from my experience, when I got accepted to be a fellow at GBHI, all I experienced was excitement. I was just super excited. You know, to the limit, I wasn't even prepared for the challenges. So sometimes when you're overexcited, we don't have the space to think through and to do our research to see what are the challenges and to try and picture ourselves in a different culture, especially coming from Africa. It's actually different. It's really different. So for me, after coming here, okay, I was excited. I met everyone. Everyone was friendly. But it's still a challenge to fit in, you know? Mm-hmm. Coming from somewhere, coming from Ethiopia and meeting people from every side of the corner, every side of the globe. And, you know, it was exciting in a way, but it was somehow frustrating. Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, in GBHI, everyone has different background and you might not have same language, same communication level. And I would say be prepared for the challenges, be mentally prepared, emotionally prepared, and use every opportunity, every challenge as a stepping stone. Because if we become more discouraged, you know, there are times I get really lost, where I was very lost. I didn't understand what people were saying. But, you know, I kept on going and I'm here. I'm happy now. So, don't give up. Just use every opportunity and it will be rewarding, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So resilience, really, and having a little bit of a support network around you and, having people that you can turn to, mentors, peers, you know. And for the GBHI experience, was it helpful to have 11 other people who came from all different parts of the world? Has there been that sense of community in a way that, you know, nobody's used to Ireland in that sense?
Yes. Most of us were new to Ireland. So most of us had the same issues, the same challenges, looking for a house, registering, getting into the system. So even that sort of challenge, it helped us to connect with each other and learn from one another. And it's always exciting to know about somebody, you know, to learn about their culture, where they are from, because, it's new. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of sounds or seems to me that this is sort of becoming inevitable, at least in Ireland now. We're going through another stage, another wave of emigration. You know, the third, I don't know what one you were on, but like I'm on the most recent one now. People are leaving again. So do you think that this international mobility is the future of research, of clinical research, advocacy, whatever you want to call it? Are we only going to get more and more mobility, do you think? Or do you think it's more waves, like peaks and troughs?
First of all, it really surprised me that this happens here in a high-income country, so I'm totally surprised by this movement. But I think nowadays there is so much collaboration. COVID was bad in many ways, but put us together through Zoom and other platforms. So I think the need for mobility now it's less, right? But it's still some kind of training I could not get in Brazil for sure. Right? And it's not only about learning how to do epidemiology or statistics, like how I use SAS or R. It's not about only the hard skills. It's always also about soft skills. Because when you go to a place that is way above the place that you were before, so for example, at Harvard, there is no limit. There is no, it's only the sky. There is no glass ceiling, right? And there's a lot of glass ceiling in my country. So you start thinking that you can do different stuff that you are used to before. And I think that was one of the most important things that I learned outside my country, you know, that we can do big stuff. It's the same work almost, do small stuff, insignificant, and do wow things. You just have to you have to dream about it. And this kind of training you don't get in average places. You have to go to a very different place. So I think there is space still for mobility, but at the same time, we are living in a country that is in a world that is very connected. So we may still collaborate even if you're here in Ireland and in Brazil where you're in Sydney. You can only find a good time of the day that we can connect and you can collaborate And I think that's a wonderful time that we are living now regarding this aspect.
Mm-hmm. So how did they get you to come back to Brazil?
Oh, it's a super personal story. I don't know if...
That's fine. My broader question is, how do countries retain their talent? So if you have people who go and learn these amazing skills and do these fellowships, how do you get people... How can countries make sure that they get their talent back? What can they do?
Well, I know... In the Australian system, at least, they have... sort of mobility built into some of the prestigious fellowships. And so you do 2 years overseas, but you have to come back and do the rest of the fellowship then back in your home institute or somewhere else. And it's to build that capacity, ensure that the skills that you're, you know, developing while you're on the overseas component is being brought back. And that's a big part of those schemes. I'm assuming it's something similar for...
Yeah, so I stay in the US with a fellowship from the Brazilian government. If I had to stay, if I want to stay there, I had to give the money back, and I didn't have at that time. So that was one of the reasons that I came back. But at the time, I got divorced and I went to the US. That's why I said it's personal. And then I got a boyfriend in the United States. I came back, but I was going to get... married and come back to the United States, but in the end, the thing fell apart. I think it was good. And I didn't have any personal reasons to come back to the US anymore. And after some years, I think we are discussing this the other time, we still do, I would be one more person in the US, I think, sometimes, because there's so many bright people, depending on the institution that you are, but I think if you get good training, you can make a difference in your own environment. It's really easy to see the difference in certain settings because there are so much scarcity, and you can see the difference. So what I can say, for example, after I came back, has been almost 10 years, I have students that were early career investigators for the American Heart Association that I think is totally awesome. I could never imagine that a Brazilian could get this award, or we got awards regarding this in the Neuropsychology Society, for the Alzheimer's Association got something too. So it's been transformative, I think, not only in my group, but other groups in Brazil too. When people come back, they come back different, and they bring some of the spirit that they learn outside.
I think my experience might be different because I believe the moving will continue, or even be more, because the more there is war in different parts of the globe, the more there is economic instability in different parts of the world. Especially, for example, in my country, Ethiopia, in different parts of Ethiopia, in different regions, war is going on, you know, still now. So whenever I talk to my sisters, my younger siblings, they always ask me, they always ask me for guidance, you know, I want to go out, study this, I want to go out and do this. So I feel like every time I speak with them, they're very young, and every time I talk to them, I feel like they're losing hope in their country, they're losing hope in studying their, you know, serving their community, helping other people, you know. So I believe that this moving will continue, especially in the parts of the world where, you know, economic instability and war is happening. But another thing I would mention, and on your last question, countries, they need to give value to educated people, you know, qualified people, you know. They need to be motivated. They need to be encouraged to do more. Unless and otherwise... We are all human beings. We always want something better. We always want something good. So, yeah.
Incentives. Yeah.
Yeah.
Stability. Money helps.
Yeah, money.
Yeah. Okay, I'm conscious of the time. I think it's about that time to open it up to questions. I'm sure there are people sitting here who are from somewhere different or have moved. Is there anybody who has questions for the panel? So the question, I remembered to repeat it, is what do you lose when you are open to change and when you make these changes, these moves?
Such a hard question.
It's a hard question.
I think you lose the counterfactual of it, you know. There is always a prize. I'm a very optimistic person, you know. I try to see the glass half full. But of course, I stay 3 years out of my clinical practice. I lose some patients physically. I also lose some opportunities there. But in the end, I think for me at least, the benefits were so large compared to what I lose. And I also, I had my daughter with me. You had too. So they learned to live in a different perspective, of a global perspective. She's very respectful to other cultures. I think that's something that she learned that I didn't have to explain. She just noticed. So I don't know. I think you lose the other things that stay behind you. You don't come back the same person too, right? Yeah. But I have good feelings about this. I don't know.
I would say, for me, family. Because, of course, I'm lucky enough to come here with my husband. But since I had a very deep connection with my parents and siblings, and moving, I have never been away for this long. So for me, being away from family, my friends, my relatives, being away from, you know, that beautiful culture, that beautiful coffee ceremony, I really do miss it. And it was a challenge. It is still a challenge.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I've missed out on so much in terms of like my two brothers, like getting married, having children. I don't get to see my nieces growing up, and it's like that's a decision I made. But I think there's always a part of you that has your foot in both camps. And I always have wondered, like when times were bad in the early days, I'd always think, oh, what have I done? Like I could have gone back, and then I'd have my former supervisor, Shane O'Mara, sending me emails going, when are you coming back? Have you looked at this opportunity? And I'm like, oh, like, should I? And just that uncertainty and not knowing, am I doing the right thing? And the thing that flipped that over for me was then when things started going well. And so I got a fellowship, then I got another fellowship, then I got a permanent position and got promoted. And like things, just the momentum started building. And I think the opportunities that I've had given to me, it's very symptomatic of the Australian culture. They'll give you a go, and it's like, you know, we'll give you a go, mate. And it's like, if you want it, they'll give it to you, and they'll give you the opportunity, and you can rise really quickly. Mm-hmm. And that became quite intoxicating. And so at this, everything's going really, really well career-wise, but there's always this lingering thing of I'm not actually in my place, like you said. It's like I miss those cultural things, and Christmas is one of the worst times because it's so hot and nobody has a cooked dinner. They all eat salads and seafood, and I'm like, what is this place? Yeah. So I think it's knowing that you have like everything that you dreamed of career-wise, and I'm giving a very good life to my two children, Fionn and Oisin. Hi guys, you're now on the air. But also knowing that I've sacrificed relationships with my family and my friends, and you can't have it all. That's the worst part.
That's life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, if you had to move to somewhere else again, where would you move to and why?
Bali.
Bali, yeah.
So this is easy for me because I thought about it. I studied epidemiology. UK is the place where epidemiology happens. I thought about London, right? But I don't know. It has to be, for a period and learn a new thing that I don't know yet. There's a lot of things that I don't know. So it's not going to be that difficult.
For me, I don't know. I honestly don't know. But wherever my heart takes me, wherever I can be useful, wherever I can contribute, and wherever there is an opportunity for me, I would say that.
Yeah, so I did court a few options probably 5-6 years ago, and I was thinking about moving to the UK. Yeah, I don't know. I think I still felt that like pull to be back, and I thought that's close enough, and then at least I'd be in the same country as one of my brothers. I'd be close enough to home. But I think as well, it's not just me anymore. So I'd be moving with two small children who have their own networks and have a lot of opportunity and are doing really well. And I think, yeah, I don't think I could do another move unless someone airlifted everything that I have and put it in for me. I think I just, yeah, I've put my roots down now.
Your kids are proper Australians now.
They are proper Aussies with the most Irish names you can get, though. So, yeah.
Any other questions? I can't see at the back. Is the move an advantage? I like your first question. Is the move essential?
I wouldn't like to say essential because some people can't do it. And I think there are ways to make these things work. Like you said, we're more connected now post-COVID. And there are people who have young children or for financial reasons just can't do it. But I think it is definitely transformative. I think you said that, Claudia. I wouldn't be the researcher I am today if I had stayed. And that's nothing to do with where I was. It's more just what I've been exposed to. And my own kind of personal growth, like I've had to be more resilient, more determined, problem solve, you know, keep applying for the grants, make sure I got my visa. You know, I've just had to do it all. And I think that makes me less scared of problems in research. I'm like, oh, that's grand. Like, we'll just keep going. You know, it's made me more resilient across the board and more appreciative, I think, of what I have managed to carve out for myself and then wanting to pay that forward. I just don't know if I would be the same person if I had stayed. And I think I'm really grateful that I've had that opportunity, as tough as it was. Like, it's been amazing.
I totally agree. I don't have anything to add. Yeah, true.
Kevin? That actually brings a really interesting question, I think, Kevin, around visas and the visa challenges of who can get a visa to leave, right? So some people it's easier to travel to get to. We have people in GBHI I know who go to conferences, who want to go to conferences, and it's always challenging. So I think that's just an important point to bring up, that you really need that support network, somebody who can help you with these things in the host country that you're going to. I think, from my perspective anyway, that, you know, it helps to know someone who knows these things, and that it's not as easy for everybody. Anne-Marie, so how did you readapt to your own home culture after being away?
And how did they adapt to you? You're trying to affect change.
And how did they adapt to you?
That's so interesting. I will try to make it short, but it's a whole podcast. I think, first of all, Americans are very direct. They don't like... Brazilians, no. Brazilians never say no, you know, you try to be, to please all the time. So every meeting in Brazil lasts at least 1 hour, maybe 2 hours, maybe three. So it's crazy. So when I came back, I was really impatient with all the circle, you know, and it was a problem when I come back. And at the same time, people saw me more, this is a problem of female researchers, I think, they call me aggressive. Because I was too direct, you know? I became more direct. So I think people say, oh my God. And this happens, I think, 2 weeks ago. We are in a conference, I organized the conference, and one of my old mentors said that I became different when after I came back from the US, and I got more aggressive. He used that word. It was so pissed. And because I became too direct for my culture, right? And another thing that changed in me very quick is that there is abundance. In the US, I think there is here too. There is no, in most low income, middle income countries, there is scarcity. So we live in this mindset of a scarcity. So funny story is that I submit a grant for very small money, but I said, I'm gonna put whatever I can, the maximum that I can of funding. And if they don't like, they just cut it. They put me out of the competition because I put the wrong numbers, you know. So I didn't have the chance to try to get that grant because they are still working in the scarcity mindset. So that's one of the problems that I faced when I come back.
Great. Well, I think we're going to have to wrap up there. So it's a really complex issue, leaving home for work, for science, for advocacy. I think we've heard a lot about mentorship, about collaboration, cooperation, but ultimately just being open and willing to take a leap of faith. Super complex issue. Thank you all. Please thank our guests, Elul, Claudia, and Wurin. And the very last thing, thank you all for being genuinely a really incredible audience after a very packed and long day, and for joining us as part of the AAIC Neuroscience Next Conference here in Dublin. I'm Francesca Farina, live from Trinity College, and you have been listening to and watching a special live recording of the Dementia Researcher podcast. Thank you.
The Dementia Researcher podcast was brought to you by University College London with generous funding from the UK National Institute for Health Research, Alzheimer's Research UK, Alzheimer's Society, Alzheimer's Association, and Race Against Dementia. Please subscribe, leave us a review, and register on our website for full access to all our great resources. DementiaResearcher.nihr.ac.uk.